Blog Talk Radio.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we lose our soul. If it takes all night long, come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we lose our soul. If it takes all night long, the evening sun is sinking low. The clock on the wall says it's time to go. But I got my plans, and I got plans for you. I'll tell you all exactly what we're all gonna do. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul. If it takes all night long, come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul. If it takes all night long.
Why is it 12 o'clock and it might be 3? Time doesn't mean that much to me. Ain't felt as good since I don't know when. Don't know when I'm gonna feel this way again.
So come on, get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul. If it takes all night long, come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul. If it takes all night long.
Might be 6 o'clock, it might be 8. It don't matter that it's getting late. We're gonna make the band play one more song. Get in the groove if it takes all night long.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul. If it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul. If it takes all night long.
And welcome to Fill My Eyes and Laurent with Poetry. I hope everyone had a wonderful week and happy Friday to all. Hey, Laurent, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
If I was any better, I'd be good.
Yeah, I know. Amen.
Yeah, you should know.
Amen. I should have known. I don't know why I asked.
I don't know. I mean, if I was twins, I'd be setting things on fire. That'd be just the way it is. But, yeah, so it's been one of them weeks, I'll tell you. But it's good to be here. It's good that it's Friday. I hope everyone who's winding up their week has a great night. And anyone whose week is just starting, hang in there. The end of the week is coming. That's the way I look at it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
What else is happening?
Well, the snowstorm turned out to be a bust, at least for us. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't anticipate that the world would be at war by the end of this week, but there it is.
Yeah.
But it is Friday, and it is AP, so we're good.
Well, you know, it's good weather and a sorry state of affairs to do with the world. That is for sure. There's just enough. I don't know. Well, never mind. I guess I shouldn't say anything because I could be very bad. But, you know. Yeah, you know. A couple of idiots can get a lot of trouble started. That's what I'm going to say. Anyway, you know, our prayers go out to everyone in the Ukraine. And hopefully, I don't know, hopefully somebody put the brakes on that mess. Come to their senses a little bit. But we all know how that usually ends up working. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I could get hung up there for a long time with voicing my unkind opinions. Still well deserved, though. could I say? Anyway, it looks like we have a wonderful board tonight and a lot of good poetry. So with that, you know, I hope we have a few callers because we have plenty of it. And I know Naomi is on the line, but she's only going to be able to stay about 40 minutes, she said. So we got to torment her quick, fast, and in a hurry, and then let her read her piece and send her on her merry way to, I don't know, sit back and drink wine or whatever she's going to do tonight, kick up her heels or, you know, something like that. Three, hello.
Go to bed. I have to go to bed. I have business. I have all the family coming over tomorrow. Again.
Oh,
another birthday party.
There you go.
They're making me old.
Long time ago.
They're making me old before my time. They're wearing me out.
I hear you.
They plan parties at my house, and then they phone me up and they say, "Oh, by the way, Mommy, it's so and so's birthday, and we're doing it at your house." Oh, okay,
bye. Mom, we're having a surprise party.
Yeah, it's a surprise party at your house. Because house is right in the middle of everybody, you know, like they live all around Quebec, but my house is right like in the center, so it's the ideal place for everybody to drive to to meet up at, and plus it's the biggest house of everybody, so everybody fits in it.
There's nothing quite wrong with that, actually. That sounds like a winning idea. Oh, my gosh. How funny is that?
Well, that's good. We need
to take it easy on you, though. We can't wear you out all the time.
But I'm always happy to have them over. We always have fun.
I understand that. That's good. That's very good. That's what wonderful memories are made of. All those things, parties and smiles and laughter,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, all that. I totally agree.
It goes so fast.
Yep, blink of an eye. Blink of an eye.
Those granddaughters of mine are just, you know, my gracious, one of them is going to be a year old already. You know, it's like she was just born.
My daughter's 30, my son's 28, my grandson's 11.
That's about like me. Yeah, that's about the same age as mine. My eldest one is gonna be 33. March.
My daughter just turned 30 in December. My grandson just turned November 11 in November. And my son, well, he just turned 28 in July. So they're getting up there, them kids. I look pretty good for 21. You know, just saying.
Well, I'm happy. Anyhow, I had my kids really young.
That's going over like a lead balloon. I'm going to put up our first poem for the night. Ron, would you be so kind as to read this?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, maybe I'm not here. Is anybody here?
I'm here.
I hear some background noise. Somebody's here.
Absolutely. I just got to refresh the page. Can you hear me?
Oh, gosh, there you are. Wow. All of a sudden,
is
you got very quiet. There you go.
Can you hear me?
I hear you now.
Okay.
Yours.
You want me to read the classic poem?
Yes, please.
Yeah. The poet is Elizabeth Bishop, born American but raised in Canada. Okay, and this is called Sonnet. I'm in need of music that would flow over my fretful, peeling fingertips, over my bitter-tainted, trembling lips, with melody deep, clear, and liquid slow. Oh, for the healing swaying, old and low, of some song sung to rest the tired dead. A song to fall like water on my head, and over quivering limbs dream flushed to glow. There is a magic made by melody, a spell of rest and quiet breath and cool heart that sinks through fading colors deep to the subaqueous stillness of the sea and floats forever in a moon-green pool held in the arms of rhythm and of sleep. End poem.
Well, that's a nice one, Laurent. Very nice.
Yeah,
very nice.
That's like a great deal.
Go ahead. I
liked it a great deal when I read it. I read it like 3 times. Mm-hmm. I love the way she wrote it. I love the rhyme scheme.
Right.
I did the tone of it, the images that it brought forth. Really, most of all, the imagery. I mean, the subaqueous stillness of the sea. A spell of rhyme.
Right.
What I really liked was a song to fall like water. No, of some song sung to rest the tired dead. The song to fall like water on my head. I thought that was very, very good.
Right. Nice.
And
nice.
What did you think of it?
Me? I liked it. Yeah. I liked it very much. There's a lot of lines in it that I liked as well. I'm in need of music that would flow over my fretful, feeling fingertips, over my bitter, tainted, trembling lips, with melody deep, clear, and liquid slow. Oh, for the healing swaying old and low. I thought it was, something about it I just really loved. There was a nice sensual undertone to it, and I think I liked that best. It wasn't anything specific. It just, the images provoked those feelings, and I think that was pretty neat. So, yeah, it was a great choice.
And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, well, me, the lines that Phil just cited were my favorite, too, although I love it all throughout, you know. But me, too, it's just that feeling, you know. Yeah, it is, like, sensual, and, you know, it has a lot of beautiful imagery, and the flow is just beautiful, like music, you know. And, it's just a beautiful, beautiful poem there. Just amazing.
Yeah. I totally get that.
It's Canadian,
nice.
Too.
Of course.
Canada has been described as America Light.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. Ooh.
It's very beautiful.
Okay, I guess when everything gets quiet, that means it's I'm supposed to do something.
Yeah, you got to step in and feel that sound.
Yeah.
Sending you to work.
Yeah, I know. Ron, do me a favor. Save me for last each time so that way I know when it's my turn. It's after I shut up, I just throw a poem up.
Don't upset the apple cart, huh? Okay, I won't.
Yeah. Kind of. It gets me confused. I don't have far to go with that. Let's be real. Naomi, I'm going to put one up and ask you to read it, please.
Yes, by Sapphire Rose. Oh, this will be a real pleasure. A gentleman, no longer how do you pronounce that word?
Anesthetized.
No longer anesthetized by your memory. A gentleman is simply a patient wolf. I sit at my mahogany desk, anesthetized, with a quill in hand, numb to yesterday. Single black candle sheathed in a crystal holder, elegant and refined in its simplicity. Flame aglow and dancing with shadows along the wall adjacent to my desk, reflecting on the final hours of our time together, my body disregarded the warnings of my mind. I allowed his essence to possess me, thundering over my skin with lightning bolt electricity, seeding our bond in wafts of carnal perfume behind his veil of teasing lust. Submission is a must. Passionate shades of your past run deep. You showered in me in secrets, awoken darkness within, coloring my world in hues of nightshade. He doused me in secrets, drip-fed me doom. Intense charms chains me to him. Wavelets of euphoric pleasure ripped through me. I was the moth to his flame, left confused and vulnerable in his absence. I'm no longer anesthetized by his memory. End poem.
Nicely read, Naomi. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Love the way this is laid out in couplets with one stanza of three lines before the end, which I find I have to do sometimes myself. A line doesn't fit by itself or with anything else, so boom. I am no longer anesthetized by his memory. We have somebody who's woken up. The absence of the love has left her feeling numb to yesterday. And from that emotion, we see the description of the room flowing into the final hours of our time together. My body disregarded the warnings of my mind. That happens a lot. I like the fact that she made that distinction between what the mind wants and what the body desires. I do like this stanza, seating our bond in wafts of carnal perfume behind his veil of teasing lust. Submission is a must. So basically that ties in the title or the topic, A Gentleman is Simply a Patient Wolf. I thought she did a good job with that. So clumsily worded by me. I thank you, though, Sapphire Rose. And we'll turn to Naomi for comments.
Yeah, I love how she used light in this, from the single black candle, elegant and refined, and then the flame aglow dancing with shadows. And then after she has, the electricity, the lightning bolt electricity seeding our bond, And then coloring my world in hues of nightshade. you know, that's when all the you know, the Starston wave there, the denouement of the end there, when, you know, she wakes up, you know. So I love how she used, you know, she went from the candle to the, she used candle and shadow play and, you know, electric lightning bolt electricity, you know, throughout this piece. I love also how it's laid out in me too, you know. And, yeah, I just love that, how she played with yeah, with candle and the flame and everything throughout. I think it was a brilliantly written piece. So bravo, Sapphire.
Yeah, well said, Naomi. Thank you. And Jean, you're last.
Well, I thought this was this piece was full of wonderful imagery and great emotions conveyed in the words. You know, it, I don't know. I just thought there was a great sensuality throughout the whole piece. Yeah, and I really enjoyed it. And Sapphire, I think this was an excellent write. It's hard to believe that you didn't just write it yesterday. See that? Just saying. Anyway, it was excellent. So thanks for sharing with us for sure.
A nice one page pick.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So let me see. I guess I will read the next one because, you know, you got to read one or two, I guess. Otherwise, it'll all be beating me up. Okay, here we go. This is called The Waltz by Diane D. And I think this is the first time I've ever seen Diane D's work without a sound clip. Just saying. Anyway, this is
yeah.
called The Waltz. Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? It's like, wow, wait. So here we go. A fiery sky ushers evening into winter's milk-white living room. As a broken yolk sunset trolls its orange peach tail behind it. Brush strokes of color streaked across a powder-puff cloud, begging Tangerine to waltz his nightingale across the bone rug. Tiptoes shuffle left, lumber right. Her swan-white ball gown swirl mesmerized the mountaintops and harvested the lightning bugs. Elegant was her grand entrance and captivating his pricely exit. It's as graceful as they were opened, chiffon curtains call for a curtsy. And so on.
Nice read, Jean.
Tell you, I just trips myself up nothing. There. But,
you know,
yeah.
Argo Wings has a contest up and running that you mentioned in the room a couple of minutes ago. And in the text of the contest, she explains that some of the poems that she reads, a lot of the poems she reads on AP, are equal to or superior to the so-called classic poems that she had to study in school. And I think this is a poem that fits well into that description, just like the one we read before. This one, the tiptoe shuffle left, lumber right, her swan-white ball gown swirl mesmerized the mountaintops and harvested the lightning bugs. That's a beautiful phrasing. And the imagery is absolutely excellent in this. It's not long. It's a perfect little piece, The Waltz. I especially like Winter's milk-white living room. That's well done. Mm-hmm. Naomi, could we have your comment, please?
Yeah, you know, that's a beautiful use, like you said, of imagery. The orange peach tail behind it, you know, the trawling of the orange peach tail there in the beginning, and then the brush strokes of color streaked across the Powerpuff clouds, begging Tangerine to waltz. You know, the color in this is so beautiful. You know, well, Diane has a way with imagery. I mean, you know, it's just beautiful every time she writes it. I'm always captivated in her pieces. And I just love that ending. As graceful as they were opened, chiffon curtains call for a curtsy. It's like doing a curtsy before exiting the poem there. Just a brilliant, brilliant piece all the way through.
Thank you, Naomi. And Jean, you read that well? What did you think?
I wish I did read that well, Laurent, but thanks for saying so. I just felt like I
could. Oh, you
in.
Did.
I don't know. That was rough on me. I was feeling kind of dumb on every other line. But Diane D., this was beautifully written. It was definitely just me. I love the imagery. I love the use of colors throughout. I just thought it was just lovely from beginning to end. Each stanza just had a wonderful feel to it. Definitely a beautiful job. So thank you so much for sharing with us. That's it. It's for sure. Let me see now. Okay. Laurent, I'll put the next one up for you. Yeah, Argo said she loved that one. The use of color is just wonderful. And I have to agree 100%. Okay, Laurent, whenever you're ready, I put one up by Daniel DeShino.
All right. And his effort is called The Anxious Smile. It's not the depression, the anxiety. It's not the extreme stress that numbs every sense my body uses to absorb reason that makes me feel like I'm 100 pounds overweight, that kidnaps and tortures who I am. It's the loneliness. There's nobody that can help, and on those desperate, rare days, I try to gasp for breath. There seems nothing anyone can do, and that is the vampire bite of loneliness that creates the hopeless golem I am that. Call it what you will, golem, zombie. Not soulless, though, because the soul is there, somewhere. I still have one. It just has duct tape over its mouth, and hands are tied, and feet in shackles. And I am locked in a dusty, dark corner, in a cabin in the woods, abandoned and desolate. But I don't know if anyone will find. Familiar, though, this place is, because I've been here before so many times. I've escaped. But why do I think I will this time? I want to reach out for help. So much I do. There are people right here. I guess this place isn't abandoned. Will they help me? Some talking to me. Some even holding my hand. I just can't. I wish I could explain to you why. I wish I could explain to me why. I just can't. I can't explain how painful it is. And the smile I have on doesn't help. No one really cares anyway. I don't really have the strength anymore myself. I just don't know. I end poem. Naomi, why don't you start us off there?
Yeah, well, he described depression so well, you know. I go through it sometimes, and, you know, it's like as if you don't have any, you don't feel anything, really. You have no feeling. It's just, like he said, it's like you weigh 100 pounds overweight. Just feel heavy, it's just, and the way he finished that there, I just don't know. It's like he just finished it so perfectly there, I think, you know, just to convey all that emotion there, just in that those last three lines there. Well, three lines and two, you know, the ending lines there. That's just it, you know. You don't know anymore. You're just lost. You don't care. You know, sometimes you get to a point where you just don't care, just leave me alone. And so I think he did a wonderful, wonderful job of conveying that emotion throughout this poem. So wonderful, wonderful right here, Daniel.
Thank you, Naomi. Great comments. Yeah, how does one convey the impression of loneliness? He begins by telling us what it isn't. It's not the depression, the anxiety, although those are probably brought on by that sense of loneliness. And he admits that there's nobody that can help. And on those desperate, rare days, I try to gasp for breath. That's beautiful. There seems nothing anyone can do. And that is the vampire bite of loneliness that creates the hopeless golem I am at. And right there, I had to pause. The golem is perfect. The zombie is perfect, but not without a soul. He describes the soul in shackles like his feet. And despite the fact that place is familiar and there are people there talking to him, holding his hand, he still can't explain how painful loneliness is. And I love the way he finished it. I just don't know. Daniel demonstrates a gold winner again. Thought it was a great piece. Gene, how about you?
You know, I thought that Dan did an excellent job with this piece. It was incredibly penned. I thought his imagery of depression was painful and well expressed. And I think the emotions were well expressed in this piece. I really think that, as usual, I mean, Dan really held his own and presented everything in a great fashion. You know, it wasn't a fun topic. It was definitely, but it packed the punch that was necessary. And, I think he did an excellent job putting things in perspective. So well done, Dan, and congratulations on that gold. Absolutely. Well deserved. Absolutely. And great read, Laurent. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see now. I'm not sure if Pam's calling in, but I'll hold off a little while just in case. Okay. Tell you what I'm going to do. I have no idea what time it is. Let me look. 10:30. Okay. I'm going to, yes. Naomi. Is that you? Naomi.
Yeah. Yes, it's me.
Yeah, I'm a little forgetful today, I think. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to read one by Mam Yang. I'm going to have Laurent read one and then come back for you to read your own. So thank you.
Okay. This is called Fan, Inktober 2021 by Mamia. She danced, flitting between bamboo poles, golden fans held at her hips. Her silk sash falls and entangles her feet. She slips amid tepid applause. End poem.
Naomi, could you read the AM, please?
The AM. I had the idea of a sing kill dancer falling on the stage, an unfortunate mishap. Singkil is a native tribal dance in the southern islands of the Philippines. It involves two pairs of bamboo poles laid perpendicularly to each other. Then they are slammed on the floor to a certain rhythm, while a female dancer posing as a princess and another posing as her aide must traverse the poles, taking care not to get their ankles squashed. Oh, cool. Sing kill.
Thank you very much, Naomi. She posted a link just below the AN, in case you're interested. And while I was in the Philippines, I actually had a chance to see this dance You don't know how they don't have broken ankles, I swear to God. And even though it was 25 words, if you've seen the dance, this packs a wallop. And if you haven't, it leaves you kind of wondering. But thank goodness she included the link. I would encourage everybody to go look at it. It's really something. And you know, if for a brevity, she did what she had to do. She held the moment in her hands, let it flow from the ink onto the paper. I liked it a great deal. How about you, Naomi?
Yeah, well, it's really concise. Well, it's a brevity, of course, it's concise, but I mean, it's, you know, really a descriptive. And I am gonna, try that link and go see what it is, because you know, it really piqued my curiosity. This right here by Mamie, yeah, so I'm gonna go see it, what it is for sure. You know, so. Fleeting between bamboo poles, you know, and entangled her feet, she slips. So I want to go see what that dance is for sure. Great right, man, yeah.
Thank you, Naomi.
Absolutely.
And Jean.
Well, I think this is a wonderful brevity. I thought there was great imagery in it, and I thought it was just very well shared with everyone. And I think I've seen this dance once before. It may have been a long time ago, though, because I have a vague memory of it. At least I have a vague one, right? Sometimes I have none. But I think that it'll be interesting to go over and check that out. Absolutely. So great job, Mamie, and thank you for sharing with us. Well, Laurent, I'm going to put your piece up for us, because may as well get it while we can, right? Naomi's here.
Absolutely.
Could just be me. Could just be you and me after this, so we'll give it a whirl.
All is ready to read at any time you wish, madame. Okay. This is called Nevermore. Soft lament I sing on this lovesick morn, over which a thin sun rises, struggling against the haze that hugs dark shores of a hidden lake. I walk the path, meandering its edge, upon which the bullfrog moralizes, responding to the sorrow this grieving morning walker makes. Never love, he glub-dubs, and your spirit need never weep. Nevermore, quoth a raven, newly risen, still half asleep. Oh, go back to bed, Bullfrog rumbled. We rue the day you read that book. We're lost, the volume tumbled, fate tempting you to look. Gone lugubrious with nevermore, melancholic and morose, your only intonation has now become manically lachrymose. You flap silently hither and yon from sunrise until pitch dark. All one hears is nevermore, a feathered seer with one remark. Off the raven flew, nevermore, he loudly croaked, vanishing into the old growth pines where nevermore was again evoked. I eyed the frog. He stared unafraid, then returned to his morning song. Never love, he burbled, adding, the raven hasn't got it wrong. End poem.
Nice job, Laurent. Naomi, you want to kick us off on this one?
Yeah, I loved how you took the nevermore of the raven, like an Edgar Allan Poe, and, you know, mixed in like a frog in there. You know, and he's like the back and forth of the bullfrog and then the raven is just so captivating through the whole piece, you know. Yeah, I just loved this. I thought it was yeah, and that it loves sick morn, you know, the soft lament I sing on this love sick morn. It just paints that morning, that stroll, you know, alongside of a lake there, dark shores of a hidden lake. The meandering, I walk the meandering, its edge. The metaphors in here are just amazing, amazingly well, witty and well written. Just a wonderful piece all through long.
Thank you, Naomi. Mm-hmm.
Well, Laurent, I think this was great. When I heard it the other day, I was like, yeah, I'm getting it. I think it's a wonderful tale that you created here. I find the bullfrog is, you know, doing his thing, and here comes this raven, nevermore, you know, and everybody can recognize that. But it's just this one word that's just there above the story that's going on. And the bullfrog is kind of like, yeah, whatever. But when it comes down to it, you know, the bullfrog can't help but admit, yeah, nevermore about sums it up. You know, it just about sums the whole thing up. And I love how you incorporated them together and created something completely different with the raven in it. There was nothing ominous. It wasn't, you know, super dark. It just had a reason to be there, you know. It just did. And I enjoyed that part of it. Desperately I did. Now, what was I going to ask you about? I was going to ask you something about... Oh, yeah. This reminds me of another piece you did. Just slightly. Didn't you do another piece about frogs way back? Frogs and
about
conversation
what?
Between...
Frogs?
Frogs. It was a long time ago, but there were frogs.
I might
and there
have.
Was a conversation... And there was, like, some kind of, like, gathering or I think there was something, and I think there's just a hint of that in here, whereas it could be, like, a sister piece to that. Different, a whole different topic in a way, but still they could be suited together, and I thought that was kind of interesting because my memory's gone, wait, I think there's another poem floating around. So, but I really like this one, and I think you did a great job with it. Now, Laurent, would you like to comment on this? Just saying. Giving you your opportunity.
Normally it takes some kind of a triggering phrase to get me started. And this time it was the same, more or less, that soft lament I sing on this lovesick morn over which a thin sun rises. That kind of popped into my head. Mm-hmm. And I started to go with long lines, as evidenced by the first stanza, introducing the rhymes where it worked. But that kind of lengthy rhyming wasn't going to work the whole poem. So that's when I went to the more traditional methods of rhyming. I didn't want to seem too obvious in it. I really wasn't too sure about the word lachrymose. It almost sounds like a forced rhyme,
right,
if you will. But I guess I was lazy at this point. But the word fit, it conveyed exactly the emotion that I wanted, so I decided to use it. And the ending kind of suggested itself right at the end. I wasn't
right.
sure how I was going to incorporate the raven successfully or how I was going to finish the poem. You know, sometimes, you know, you look for an ending and you can't find it. And all of a sudden it popped into my head, wait a second. Never love, never more. It's going to work. So I went back and,
right.
you know, changed it a little bit here and there to work towards that ending, and there it was.
Right.
Thank you for the
right.
kind comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, great write.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, Miss Naomi, that brings me to...
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, we have another caller. Oh, I want to get an answer to the phone. Hold up. Nope, it's not. Hello, Rex. Welcome to the party.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine. What's
Ooh,
going on?
I know who's you. Not much. What's happening with you?
Not quite. It's a nice day. It's 70.
Oh, yeah. You can't beat that day.
No.
Unless it was in my yard.
It's a nice forward look to spring.
Nice. Yeah. Very, very, very cool. Well, I welcome you to the show. And you're here just in time to listen to Naomi read her poem. But did you happen to hear Laurent's poem?
Actually, yes.
Would
I had two
like
thoughts.
Make a comment on that?
Okay. First one was the thought of Poe in the Raven waking up from his madness to realize what he's got here this morning, walk around the lake itself, and still he's bothered by that Raven still offering up that thought to not loving ever more and never more because of Lenore being gone. But there was another thought. With the addition of the bullfrog, I kind of had that thought of the prince and the frog, and this being a woman walking at the lake and pining over a lost love, and the bullfrog is offering up that remark as almost a counterpoint, because he was turned into the frog by a witch. And yeah, don't get into love. It kind of sucks from down this end.
Well, interesting take on the poem. Okay. Very cool, very cool. Okay, now, Miss Naomi, whenever
yep.
you are ready.
Okay, this is called Wrapped in Words. I dust off the words from the palm of my heart, stretching my writing into the world, a fearless fighter with hands on my hips and a glint in my eyes, bold and sassy. Yes, that's me holding my pen. Wrapped in words and nothing else, looking confidently towards the future, releasing my usually tight ponytail from her tower upon my crown, letting its waves crash upon the shore of my shoulders, bearing my skin from the weight of my clothes, standing big and strong inside my screaming scarlet letters, dipped in and stained with my blood, splattered along the streets as I dance inside the rain and brave the eye of the hurricane, laughing at anger and crying at humor, being assertive and strong or bossy and proud, taking a stand for what I believe or simply letting things pass me by, rising on cool mornings and swimming in deep, clear ponds, walking along mountaintops and standing at the edge of cliffs to kiss the stars and breathe the moonlight as I throw words into the universe, bathing in new courage and strength found in the fiery slip of my wrist. When thorns burn down my throat and no sound steers my vocal cords, I will split the atoms of my soul and write to you a thunderstorm and poem.
Oh, great piece, Naomi. Absolutely great piece. Your beginning lines and ending lines are magnificent, to say nothing of the excellence in between. I dust off the words from the palm of my heart, stretching my writing into the world. And I will split the atoms of my soul and write you a thunderstorm. Damn, I thought. Let's get the first comment from Rex.
I agree. The start off this was wonderful. I dust off the words from the palm of my heart, stretching my writing into the world, a fearless fighter. Now, from the palm of my heart, that kind of hints at the notion of being closed off or hiding oneself. But with that notion, there's that stand, the hands on the hips, the glint in the eye, bold and sassy. Yes, that's me holding the pen. It's not so much about the pen as about the voice itself opening up in the moment and letting loose with a flurry of thoughts and counterpoints, because you hit on the again in that second stanza, burying my skin from the weight of my clothes. There's the release of a conjunctive thought of being wrapped too tightly in a singularity, as opposed to letting everything flow through you. And you hit on dipped in and stained with my blood, splattered along the streets as I dance aside the rain. I brave the eye of a hurricane. Again, laughing at the end, crying at the humor. There's a joyous opening up with those with that voice right there. And the back end, rising on cool mornings and swimming in deep clear ponds, walking along mountain tops. The freedom you found in that moment of once again taking the palm from your heart, opening yourself up to all the possibilities that rage along the shores of wherever you might step.
Yeah, thank you.
Great comment, Lex. Thank you. The courage that is found by the character, beginning with, I dust off the words from the palm of my heart, stretching my writing into the world. I love that phrase, stretching my writing into the world, as if up to this point she had withdrawn from the world, perhaps was not writing, but being who she is, a fearless fighter, yes, she's going to express herself. The ending, I will split the atoms of my soul, write you a thunderstorm, is so well done, because as again, she throws words into the universe, bathing in new courage and strength, which is a lovely image of somebody's soul stirring, and the words rising to the top, and she throws them out there into the universe. Just a lovely, lovely piece. Very mature writing. I don't mean anything by mature except for the fact that it's polished and finished in such a way that perhaps a new poet might not be able to make it. And you have. It's really well done. And Jean,
thank you.
Well, I think the difference is Naomi's very talented at creating images, but using words together that, you know, not everybody thinks to put together. You know, the very first line on that, let me pull it back up, because, of course, I closed it saying, oh, I can work over here. But it's, AP is so slow, I'm sorry. I dust off the words from the palm of my heart, the palm of my heart. And it makes it a little bit more impactful, you know. It's just like, you know, you hear it and you go, wait. And you kind of tune in a little more, like, where is this going to go? At least I think that's what I what captures me in some ways. The imagery was awesome, Naomi. Wonderful metaphors. Both were well done and enjoyable. Each stanza was strong and so well written. I thought it was great work. And thanks for sharing with us tonight, for real. Really, really good job. Enjoy it.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome, honey. Thank you. Okay, and now we're going to put Rex's piece up, because there's still four of us. That's, you know, that's a plus, right? Here we go. Okay, Rex, whenever you're ready, hon.
All right. Scarcely Page, Toes Mary, and Rhyme. Common fare. One finds the township of Scarborough, lost upon its pond, where bisling fish and rosehips are beaver dreams and summer fronds. Miss Carbuncle never knew why racing tortoises were all the rage. And Tinker Tailor, soldier spy, she smiled in wonder, turned the page. Her white rabbit was late once more, as those toadstool teacups were filled, brimming rich and hot with spore over lips and through gums spilt. Wormwood sugar, green fairy streams, saw blueberry hills, marmalade skies, pink daisy gargoyles, her tuna screams, and kissed the arse of a blue bottle thighs. Gulliver's trimsy troll huzzas filled the air with barbarous muse that coursed this blade's mirrored mirage as she stripped down to full-eyed views. Jed the tinker was hammering green sheets upon which to lay Eight bells rang in his tinkering as the sailor swam across the bay. Her botany rose in goosebumps, swimming through waves of salty flush. 'Twas there between heavenly tree stumps our sailor reveled in the blush. Yo-ho! It was Grog in the grunt, as broadsides were now midship. Land ho at the stern of the punt, on the tiller a full-handed grip. That anvil glowed in its pounding, as the tinker banged on his steel, hardened in oil's coastal sounding, well balanced in its wielded feel. One soldier with scabbard at hip now rides into the fray. Blood from Excalibur doth strip from a head bobbing in her bay. The beaver woke and started chewing on the wood that entered the punt. Splinters and grub was a-spewing, whilst the boat sunk like a drunk. In from the cold a spy snuck in and planted plastic in the hold, timed to go off like Rin Tin Sin when it was fully muscled shoaled. Half-masted, beheaded, and floating ashore, a tinker tailor, soldier spy, left this world forevermore as the beaver wept, killing the fly. Miss Carbuncle, she woke up sublime, that book still lay in her lap. Scarcely page toes merry and rhyme, refreshed from her afternoon nap. And on.
Oh, wow.
You always bring it. There's some famous authors who would have looked at your title and just chortled in appreciation. Scarcely Page, Toes Merry and Rhyme. And that just so well done. And you threw so many little Easter eggs in there. The Tinker Tailor, Soldier Pie, the White Rabbit, the Wormwood Sugar, Green Fairy Streams. Was this by any chance written with that contest about absinthe in mind? Maybe not.
Oh, no.
No?
No, this was something different. This, I was in the mood for a bit of nonsense rhyming.
Yep. Well, it's not that nonsensical. It takes quite a bit of skill to create what you create. And then you threw Gulliver in there. And, not sure who Jed the Tinker was, but one that I thought was very clever. I mean, they all are. But yo-ho, it was Grog and the Grunt, as broadsides were now midship. Land-ho at the stern of the punt, on the tiller, a full-handed grip. It's just tight. It's a perfect little stanza, as are most everything in here. Mm-hmm. I was so impressed by this. A little envious.
Thank you, Ron.
No problem. Leave us go to Naomi, please.
Oh, yeah. I can just picture this young Miss Carbuncle. What a name, too, you know, Carbuncle. And, I see it as, like, not too old, too, you know, maybe. And she's just falling asleep there with just read, you know, everything from Alice in Wonderland down to, I see, you know, like Gulliver's Travels. Maybe a bit of Peter Pan in there, too. Excalibur, for sure. And, you know, she's just all these books floating around in her head and, you know, just dreaming of it, of all these tales. And, you know, you spun it so tightly, and so well, like Laurent said. It's just wonderful, you know. It just takes you on a journey in your imagination, you know, through every line here. Just so masterfully, just written, you know. Just wonderful right here, Rex.
Thank you very much, Naomi.
Lovely comment, Naomi. And Jean Marie, let us hear from you.
Well, Rex, this piece is just kind of, it's so cool in its own way. Like, first off, you know, you look at the title and you go, Scarcely Page, Toes Merry and Rhyme. Like, we all know where you're going, like, or what the thought in the back of that was. And it's wonderful because, you know, you go and you mention Scarborough, and that was great. And then, I didn't catch everything, but I was laughing because I'm going, okay, and get Miss Carbuncle in there, and I'm going, okay. And then you're talking about racing tortoises, and I'm like, okay. But the imagery, you know, you really did paint a picture. And this reminds me of some of the artwork, kind of almost like what Pam had up last Tuesday, with the kind of abstract kind of imagery. But it's not really abstract. That's not really the word I want. I would have to kind of come up with a name because I'm not real good like that. But when I got down here, you know, I'm having images of you know, Alice in Wonderland, and I'm having just all kinds of images throughout the Scarborough Fair thing. And then you're doing, you know, you're talking about Wormwood Sugar and Green Fairy Streams, So Blueberry Hills and Marmalade Skies. Well, right there, you know, that takes me to a song, you know? And I just kind of was hearing tidbits of so much going on in here. And although you wouldn't necessarily think to put them together, you know, on any given day, you know, I give you credit because you did. You pulled them together and you somehow made it this view of imagery that was just, I don't know, just fun and exciting. But then when you get down to the very end, this is where it all comes together. You know, Miss Carbuncle, she woke up sublime. That book still lay in her lap. Scarcely page toes Marian rhyme, refreshed from her afternoon nap. It all pulls together as a dream sequence. And I think, you know, an open book, God, you know, books can take you everywhere. You know, we're anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that was what was so cool about the piece. You know, you could kind of relate all the way throughout, but when you got to the end, it was like, well, duh, she was dreaming. But it was good. It was really good. I liked it. So, nice job.
Thank you very much, Jean.
Mm-hmm. That was fun. Okay. Now, what am I going to do next? And for our next magic trick. Okay, let me see. Okay, Ron, I'm coming back to you. Because I don't have a piece to put up on the board. Nothing unusual there. I have to leave that open. Here we go. I'm going to put up a piece by Jack Tomkovic. And whenever you're ready.
All right. Jack offers us a poem called Two Scoops. You are butter pecan ice cream. Two scoops. Whipped cream and cherry on top. You are hot fudge sauce and chopped walnuts. Cookie dough and chocolate chips, hot and gooey from the oven. You are sweet white cake with wicked dark frosting and chocolate straw, caramel syrup dripping, whipped honey with extra honey. And poem. And he says, a Valentine poem for my sweetie. And it's a delicious, if I can say that. It's a delicious little piece. I love the use of ice cream, the cherry, the whipped cream, the hot fudge sauce, all the things that can be dripped over a willing body in the proper state, which is to say, unclothed. Really nicely done. And Rex, please.
Well, I go with an easy one. This is definitely, you are the sweet to my tooth. So I don't think any more will be said with that because it works perfectly with the sort of the, right from the ice cream all the way down to the cherry, the whipped honey and extra honey. So there's a lot of rich, gooey thought running off of this piece itself.
Amen to that. Absolutely. And Naomi, please.
Yeah, well, you know, as I was reading it, it's so funny. You are, and then by the time the two scoops came around, I was really picturing the body of a woman, you know, the two scoops, like the upper and the downer, the whipped cream, maybe the hair flowing, you know, and all the rest, you know. So I see, like, the description of the person a bit. Wonderful imagery throughout there. And, you know, just what a unique and witty way to write a Valentine's poem that isn't like all the Valentine poems that you see all the time, you know, like, I love you and la, 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 la. You know, here he just went out of the, you know, the traditional and went into something really, really unique and witty and clever. So, like, I applaud him for that, you know. Just so, so clever, so neat.
Amen. And Jean?
I thought this was a great piece by Jack, and I thought it was just a lovely and sweet Valentine's gift for his wife. Just really nicely done. It wasn't super complicated. It was just sweet and kind. Yep, I liked it. So that's what I can say. Okay, the next one I'm going to put up is by Frank. So here we go. And I got a SoundCloud for that. So let me play it.
Amongst the deep labyrinth of a viscous grove is an ancient tale, spooking the native Wabanaki tribe, fearing the spirit of the Skardigalooch, for she is the harrowing nightmare that haunts them with sheer terror, in the creeping shade of death lurking in the obtenebrated nights. Legend says she was buried inside a hollow, lone willow tree amidst the fawning branches of a forsaken burial place unmarked, and her ghastly ghost echoes a startling noise of her eerie voice roaming the grove in search of helpless souls of foolish believers. At night, she's a terrifying walking corpse of a vampiric Nosferatu, looking to quench her insatiable thirst for blood in carnal flesh, as he changes into a spectral of such an intense light and flame, flying like a black ray with red beady eyes of a menacing whore, devouring the flesh and gnawing at the bare bones of perished humans, drinking their pouring blood like a ravenous beast of the midnight. Her wicked laughter is a sound of the roaring thunder and lightning. To be rid of her, you must burn her to ashes and scatter them to whistling winds. Hark, do you hear her breath?
Good inhale. Wow. I shouldn't say that. I think that Frank understands the darkness only too well. And he delivers it with panache, in a voice that's almost greedy for the terror. The images portend. At night, she is a terrifying walking corpse of a vampiric Nosferatu, looking to quench her insatiable thirst for blood and carnal flesh, as she changes into a spectral orb of such an intense light and flame, flying like a black crow with red, beady eyes of a menacing terror. Hark, do you hear her breath? Yes, I do hear her breath. Excellent, excellent piece. Naomi, if you could comment first, please.
Yeah, I love dark pieces, and this is, you know, one great one right here. You know, the well, you read
the lines that captured my attention too. Just wonderfully, wonderfully crafted throughout this rite. And, you know, it tells of a tale too, not only, you know, imagery, which is great, but also it tells kind of like a tale. You know, the legend says she was buried inside a hollow lone willow tree. So you have the history there, you know, of the myth there, or the tale. And, just wonderfully composed throughout. So bravo, Frank, on this rite, you know.
Thank you, Naomi. And Rex, please.
I haven't heard of the Scudagumooch before, so I took a quick look at it. And he hit the right tone with who and what it is. A ghost witch, something that morphs. It needs the blood to keep itself alive. It was thought at one point it was a sorcerer who wanted to live forever. So this is kind of what he turned into, or she turned into. And I like the thought offering up the vampiric Nosferatu as part of the lore with it, because in order to live as the undead zombie-like thing that she is, you got to drink the blood and drip into that, dig into that flesh to meet the needs to keep on living undead, so to speak. Quite a different thought. I like this one. Got to read more about her or it.
Thanks, Rex. And Jean.
Well, you know, I think that Frank did an excellent job with this as well. He does have a way with all his dark rites. His voice lends a lot to the rites themselves. He brings them all to life, and I don't want to say it suits him, because I don't want to say something that sounds awful. But he's just good with the atmosphere that he puts together. And he can make it really creepy. And I think this was no exception to the rule of him pulling together a dark rite and putting it out there and making everybody kind of step back for a second. I mean, sometimes they really are a little off-putting. It's like, whoa. But, you know, his sound effects are great, and his background sounds are good, and his rites are always excellent. So nice job, Frank, and thanks for sharing with us. Yep. Oh, well, I'm not going to get all excited like that one, but it was a good piece, Frank. I liked it. Absolutely. Now, let me see. Where am I going to go now? Okay. I have another one here by, well, no, I'm going to pull up Argos first. And here we go. I'll put this up. And this is by Argo Wings. So here we go. Oh, before I do that, I'm sorry. I have another caller on the line. Hello, Passions, and welcome aboard.
I thought you were going to forget me yet again.
You wouldn't be the first time I forgot anybody. Did you happen to hear Frank's right?
Yes, I did.
You want to make a comment?
I sure do. They it's very scary the way his tone. I mean, he does fantastic on these dark pieces. I thought he did great on the essential pieces. He does exceptionally well with these dark pieces. I mean, I was reading and listening and looking over my shoulder at the same time. The last two stanzas was what caught me. Flying like a black crow with red beady eyes of a menacing horror, devouring the flesh and gnawing at the bare bones of perished humans, drinking their pouring blood like a ravenous beast on midnight. Oh, my God. I don't know where he comes up with it, but it's great work.
Right. I agree. It's just really something. But excellent, excellent. And thank you for the comment. Now, my next piece I'm going to put up, is, as I said, is by Argo Wings. Let me hit the Thanks, Frank. I appreciate it.
What happened to him?
Let me see now. This one has an audio, so here we go.
Power outages in my head. There is blood in my poetry, the kind that seeps from self-inflicted wounds, to drip in taunting rivulets as viscous ink, marring the ivory of my zygomatic arches, slow and meaningless. I can taste the copper at the corners of my lips where you kissed away the torment. Slipping on wet tiles, we grind in clumsy symmetry, our labored breaths vibrating the walls of vacant, lightless halls. Your possessive fingers purple my hip bones in frantic urgency, only for us to slide across the chilled slab of this hymal wasteland, where black ice drips over itself and permafrost lies dormant. The February thunderstorm subsides into a rush of heady cologne and warm undertones.
Nicely done, SoundCloud. This is quite the piece. There is blood in my poetry, the kind that seeps from self-inflicted wounds to drip in taunting rivulets as viscous ink. Great imagery, great phrasing. Those self-inflicted wounds that I think torment all of us. Sometimes I think we can do more damage to ourselves than any other outside agency. I love the use of the word zygomatic. The possessive fingers purple my hip bones is another phrase which really sticks with me. But you finish it. The February thunderstorm subsides into a rush of heady cologne and warm undertones. It's well stated. It leads us to that inevitable conclusion. Happily so. And a lovely gold piece. Nicely done. Rex, your comment, please.
I got to go with the duality, not just in the title itself, power outages in my head, but the voice that walks within. On the one angle, you can walk this as the pain in the, say, the waning hours of the evening when you're trying to write, but nothing seems to come. And then you get that, where you kissed away my torment, the muse kind of kicks in. And everything from then on down is that urgency to let everything flow in the moment. But it also works well as a singularity to description of lovemaking in the wee hours of the morning, too.
Thanks, Rex. And Naomi, please.
Yeah, well, I think she did a wonderful, wonderful job with this. You know, it's she made poetry writing sensual, you know, dark sensual, you know, with the blood in my poetry, that kind that seeps from self-inflicted wounds, you know, that drips into vicious ink. And then I can taste the copper at the corner of my lips. And then, you know, she goes down and down. And, you know, the black ice there, I love that. And the permafrost lies dormant. You know, this is really, really well composed. My gracious, it's just a wonderful, wonderful piece all through there. It leaves me a little bit in awe there, this writing. So just so wonderfully composed. The metaphors, wow.
I got to agree with you. Nicely done with that comment. And passion, please.
I believe Argot nailed it with his teeth. Many of the lines is just repetitive with what y'all guys have said. I like, especially that I can taste the copper at the corner of my lips where you kissed away my torment. And I believe part of me, what Rex has said about, you know, the late night lovemaking is what I read into those lines. Also, your purple, my hip bones, beautiful lines, beautiful imagery throughout. She did an exceptional job on this piece. I love it.
Amen. And I think that brings us to Jean. Jean, if you could comment, please.
What, you want me to do this off mute?
Well, I admit
on,
I
haven't. I've been good all night. I've been good all night. I said, MJ, MJ, MJ. I'll tell you, this is an excellent dark sensual piece. Not dark as in deep and dark and gory, but, you know, dark. It had a real nice edge to it. I thought there was wonderful imagery, great use of language throughout. It was just really something. So, Melissa, I have to say, great job on this. It wasn't a huge, like, long piece, but it was long enough, and it was so well put together. Just an excellent, excellent job. Thanks for sharing with us. Okay. Now I have to do something. Okay, let me go do it. Next piece. And for our next magic trick, we are going to put up a piece by Richard Whiteman. And here we go. Got to hit that button. I'm running a comment behind, so I apologize. Here we go. And this is called, yes, 13 by Richard Weissman. There it goes.
Two synchronized incidents bled out to waking nightmare. 13-year-old tears blurring half-empty pages, and dead boy fantasies of eggshelled artistry. Artistry drained by bleak economic pop culture law. Materialistically cherry lip glossing novel plots and characters to pale. Until he bow-tied saner suits. Several brainwashed seasons later, cloaked nightmare faded so deep subconscious that catatonic schizophrenia seemed causeless, until two synchronized incidents, empty clawed recollection, revival of 13-year-old eggshelled fantasies wedded to white, ravaged destitution, cold pop culture destinies fizzled, bleak prophecies fulfilled. Shrill ring of the wire diverts him momentarily. Sad call from a saner world, hollers for a saner life. But it's 3 a.m., and blurring half-empty pages of damaged novel plots are calling incessantly. His muse echoes back, spite feared, sleepless, readerless, penniless madness. His waking nightmare revives. 9 months passed. Look coldly through ocean-smooth glass at these cultureless scrawlings. Reflective, dark brilliance makes stomachs turn. Crystal gaze through dawn's mallish marketplace. Sad betraying millions of 13-year-old nightmares, now unconsciously embodying life's barest necessities. End poem.
piece. With your permission, Rex, let's start with you.
All right. There's a couple of things. It hits on materialism and that which people see in some things and not in others. So there's a thought to a promise not delivered therein, which kind of has a nice hard knocking ring to it. But then in the middle, you've got this one piece, shrill ring of the wire diverts him momentarily. Sad call from a saner world, follows for a saner life. But it's 3 a.m. and blurring. Half-empty pages of damaged novel glossed calling incessantly. His muse echoes back. There's that again, that notion of trying in the waning hours to meet that which he thought of himself or believes of himself. But where he hits it with, where was it? Damn it, now I can't find it. The thought to the pop culture world being so fickle and not so easily swayed. I mean, hey, yeah, that can of tomato soup, that's good. We'll pay $1 million for that. But meanwhile, you walk into something else which has a little bit more deeper meaning and flair to it, yet you can't grab a penny for it, so to speak. So you live on the edge of all those dreams and aspirations that once had, and they're killing you little by little.
Thank you, Rex. His writing is really quite remarkable, and it's not. He has it on a list. First works, 1987 to 1991, and I think that a lot of first works by quality poets often has an energy of vibrancy, a willingness to experiment with language, and a great deal to say. And I think this has exactly that. Beginning for me, the opening 7-8 lines were just wonderful. The synchronized incidents bled out, waking nightmare, 13-year-old tears blurring half-empty pages, and dead boy fantasies of egg-shelled artistry drained by bleak economic pop culture law, materialistically cherry-lip glossing novel plots and characters to pale. Until he bow-tied saner suits. And this poem, for me, consists of the little bits that make up life, introduced in a voice that heaves its sighs and moans at the promises not kept by a world that promised so much. I really enjoyed the form and the method in which the poem was delivered, along with its thoughts. And Naomi, please.
And Naomi dropped.
Okay, that's right. She was going to. And Passion, please.
It was wonderfully written. To be honest, I'm not used to this type of writing, so I really don't want to say anything that I'm going to regret. I enjoyed the line, the information, the format, but I really can't go into detail about it. This is a piece that I would like to read a couple of times, actually, to then leave a comment to Richard, because I don't want to say anything that's wrong.
Ah, be brave. Nobody's going to crucify you.
I don't know about that.
Well, that was a great comment. And Richard, I really got to thank you for this piece. It is a real pleasure. And Gene, please.
I think that this piece is both clever. I think the image is interesting, and I think that it's reflected well within the write itself. It's interesting, and sometimes I get a little thrown off when I get into something a little more abstract or different. So for me to say anything too much is kind of like really going out on a limb. And I'm not good on limbs. But I find it to be just a great piece. It's well written, as Richard's pieces always are. And if I could tie it all together in my brain, I would be happy to make a deeper comment than that. But I think it, you know, as I say, you read it and it pulls together. It's just a little different from me. But great stuff, great image, great write. So thank you for sharing with us tonight. I really appreciate it. Okay, I guess it's my turn to do something because it got quiet again.
That's
I was
right.
not thinking. Okay, so we did those. Okay, here we go. We're good. Okay. Passions, I'm going to have you read your piece. And then, fellas, I have some for you. I have to just find the board. I lost it. Here we go. Okay, whenever you're ready.
Okay, mysterious movement. Colors entwining, dancing in tango, mysterious. Ambrosia kisses as lemon drops off mint leaves. Cherry tips spread its tail, welcoming a soft winter snap. Perspiration decorates in floral scents as delicate petals sway. Freely dancing beneath summer's rain, naked, vibrant, a dance that leaves you breathless. Soft whispers igniting the birth of crimson songs, and the melody of the wind leaves you longing for more. Oh, sweet rose, I envy you, the sensuality of your colors, the softness of your touch, yet the strength of your thorns when positions sway and you dance so perfectly, like love and desire, the flame of a burning candle. I am the rose. End poem.
Nice.
Oh, what a lovely piece that was. Oh, sweet rose, I envy the sensuality of your colors, the softness of your touch, yet the strength of your thorns when positions sway, and you dance so perfectly, like love and desire, the flame of a burning candle. I am the rose. I didn't mean to read what you just finished reading that way, but that last stanza just struck me, as did the whole thing. To me, it's just a gorgeous piece. And Rex, please.
I'll go that, but there's that a bit in that first stanza, right in the middle. Cherry tips spread its petals, welcoming a soft winter snap. Perspiration decorates in floral scent as delicate petals sway. That's where it opened, well, literally opened up, both figuratively and imaginatively. And from then on down, it walks a different tone of flavor, but still holds the picture itself, which is kind of a daring picture with all the colored motif of each leaf being something a little bit different. But then you walk into the back end of this last two stanzas, which are the sensual angle of both what the woman can be, the thorny angle or the soft presence.
Thank you, Rex.
That's too easy.
Please.
You put it in there.
Yes, you're right. Jean, please.
Thank you.
Yeah. I, Fashions, I really like this, right? I thought that I was looking at it. I was trying to, like, okay, let me grab something. And I looked freely dancing beneath summer's rain, naked, vibrant, the dance that leaves you breathless. Soft whispers igniting the birth of crimson songs, and the melody of the wind leaves you longing for more. You know, I really like that stanza in it, but, you know, I can't help but say I really like the last stanza as well. The last stanza was just a wonderful way to end this. So both of them have my vote, but I'm only putting one of them in my comments. it was just beautiful imagery throughout, really. I thought in the first stanza, your use of colors reflecting the colors in the image itself were wonderful. But then the next stanza just started to open up the actual thought of the poem, and I liked that very much. So nice job. Really well done.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Because I have to go do something. You know, what is that? I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. Okay, let me go back here. And Laurent, I have one for you. I don't even know what time it is. Is it like
11:35?
Oh, we're good. We're good. We're good. We're good. What the hell was I thinking? I haven't been watching the clock at all. I'm like, it could be any time. That would be really a mess, let me tell you. Okay, I got to do this and do this and do this. Now I got to find a nice, clean page to drop this. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Come on. Come on. Come on. Okay. Boy, my print's getting smaller and smaller. Us, my eyes are getting worse and worse tonight. Here we go. Okay, Laurent, whenever you're ready.
Okay. This is called Questions, Questions by Incubus. Hi, little one. Where have you gone? I think I knew, but no. What did I say? What is the day? Where did that poor boy go? Oh, there he is, but gee whiz, that light looks so damn fine. Just who am I? Can penguins fly? Are these thoughts even mine? Now, was he blue? Oh, what to do? He may be red or green. What do I eat? Do worms have feet? Now, where was he last seen? The coral reef between the teeth of a ferocious shark? Why is water wet? To guitar's fret. Best hurry before dark. Now what's his name? Is this a game? Or is he really lost? Why do I care? Do frogs have hair? And what does kindness cost? Oh, fiddlesticks, and up the nicks, I know where he has gone. I watch his eyes, can shoe tongues lie, and why is the can called John? I see you there. Now don't you dare, it is your turn to seek. Have cuckoo's clocks, and down the socks, why has the quarter beak? Now count to 10, and only then try finding where I am. Why is sky blue, and who are you? What flavors traffic jam? Now swim away, no time to play. I have to find my friend. Why is fire hot? And do flies swat? And when does this game end? End poem. Very good. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun, especially the wordplay. Rex, would you start us off, please?
Yes. I enjoyed the whimsical feel to this and the thought of a touch of Dr. Seuss and a little bit of nonsense that works in with it, because if you're looking at this from the child's perspective and that ever-looming question after question after question and the oddity in the questions that you get one after the other, then the nonsense angle works really good, because when you get the barrage of questions like that, it is always those two, three questions out of left field, like the why is water wet and do guitars fret, that leave you scratching your head in the moment, but it's that little game like a punch buggy or a license plate counting, except this is done, it's a never-ending thought of how parents can get frustrated in the moment because of all the questions like, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, the wordplay in this is quite delicious. Do worms have feet? Do they have a head? Frogs have hair? I mean, just It's very engaging. It's delightful in its imagery. It's playful and fun, yet doesn't wander too far from reality. Because as you said, there are many questions that kids ask incessantly, driving the parents wild. Really a nice piece. Clever, skillful, based on Dory and Nemo. And Passion, your take, please.
That was a terrific, it was a clever piece. I enjoyed it. I read it a couple of days ago and had it in my head for a while. I was at work and I'm supposed to do this in my head. He did a great job on it. That's all I can say. I loved it from beginning to end.
Sometimes a poem can just be enjoyed, even if it, you know, it doesn't make immediate sense to you. So, somehow, within the brain doesn't necessarily have to understand, but it can appreciate. And a lot of these poems, that's the first reaction I get. You know, I really like it. I can't quite tell you why yet, but I really like it. And you begin to think about it. You begin to put things together, and all of a sudden it makes sense, especially after one listens to Rex. All right, Gene.
Well, it goes back, I think it goes back to those sing-song cadences. The Dr.
Yep.
Seussian thing that we grew up with as kids. It's got that little bit of quality that kind of tickles the mind. It's, yeah, I want to go back there again.
Yeah, I'd hate to think of anyone who had more influence on children than Dr. Seuss. I think we all carry a little bit of him within ourselves, except for those things that have been stricken from the public record, which I think is ridiculous. That's another program. All right, Gene?
It's a whole other mess. Anyway. Anyway, I thought Incubus is Right was great. I did enjoy the wordplay throughout, and I found it very enjoyable. So tomorrow when he listens to this, great job, Incubus. Wonderful. Very well done. Now, Mr. Rex.
Yeah.
Can you read the next one?
Sure.
One more for you. Maybe two. I never know. I have to go see how many I have left.
Splendidly by Jack Tomkovic. If I just placed you in the milieu, the mise-en-scene along the Seine, I'm sure you'd make out old chap Bean. But if I say I dropped you head first into a ghetto of stale bread, hell then, you might just not sink. You might just sink, not swim, fall in the deep and not pop up. It just might stop you dead. You might not forge ahead, but lag farther behind. Call slow learner, white trash. Those born on third, and yes, they hit a triple, are sadly without the sense of sense the Creator gave them at birth. Doc slapped it, smack, out of them. And boom.
Nice. Nice read, Rex.
Yeah, very nice read. This is the old nature-nurture debate. You can see it fairly clearly, especially those born on third, and yes, they hit a triple, are sadly without the sense the Creator gave them at birth. Say I dropped you at first into a ghetto of stale bread. Hell then, you might just sink, not swim, fall in the deep and not pop up. This has a lot to say. I mean, it really does. Passion, can we start with you, please? Passion, no passion.
She dropped.
Okay.
She dropped.
Then I guess we're going directly to Rex.
I like the back end of it, the dry drop of humor that rolls in it. Without the sense of sense the Creator gave them at birth, Doc slapped it smack out of them. It was that's a nice touch to the a wry bit of humor to finish off that, which is clearly something that is long debatable and has quite the quandary of thoughts from both sides, but It does. You take somebody who's been silver spoon fed and toss them in what he called it was or head first into a getter of stale bread, then yes, you're going to be in an arena that does not speak to you at all. And then you hit on that sort of Eddie Murphy in Trading Places, where you did have that and how badly it went for one and how well it went from the other moving up, because he understood a little bit of the downward back end while the upper crust knew nothing of the downward back end. So there is a note to you can put somebody in the view, but if they don't know anything about it, then they're bound to fail. But if you give somebody the opportunity that has a little bit of a spunk in them, you take them out of the back end and put them up front, they might have a better chance of succeeding than the other end.
Amen. Thank you, Rex. And Jean, please.
I think Jack did a nice job with this. You know, it's a nicely written piece, and you know, as you said, it's, you know, the nature nurture thing. All short lines and a quick read. And yeah, I think that he did a nice job with it. It was just well stated. So give you something to think about. Some food for thought, so they say. Yes. So, okay, fellas. I have nothing up my sleeve. Just kidding. sorry, I'm just being silly. I have two
pieces.
Was
that a Bullwinkle trick, trying to pull a rabbit and getting a lion?
That's right. That's right. You got it. That's exactly that. I have one audio. I'm not sure. This one is by We Are All Gonzo. And there's a whole bunch of voices on it. And they're not in my head. They really are there. And I'm going to play it. I'm not exactly sure how it came to be. And I don't want to pretend like, you know, I didn't notice before I put it up. I'm not sure. I have to assume that he was in charge of this in some fashion. So, you know, from my lips to God's ears. Here we go. You know, I get nervous about permissions. And here goes.
Papa, tell us a story.
Yeah, tell us a story.
Tell us a story.
All right now, all right. Settle down, get in your bed, and I'll tell you a story.
Yay!
I love it when he tells stories. Can you tell us a scary story?
No, I don't like scary stories. I want to hear a happy story.
No, I want a scary one.
No, happy.
Scary.
Happy.
Quiet down. Stop fighting. How about Papa tells you a story about both something scary and something happy?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this story begins a long time ago in a little Icelandic town called Mývatn.
You know you'll never escape here in one piece.
Stealing things.
No, I hate Christmas.
Everyone dies.
I wish my mom was here.
I wish anyone was here.
She eats them, of course. What else would you do with children?
Little boy, wake up.
I wonder what Yule tastes like.
This is the tale of the Yule of the Giant, and the only boy who ever escaped Dimmu Borgir.
Jan, I don't care what you want. You're going to school.
But it's the last day before Christmas holidays. All we are doing is having a stupid Christmas party. But with a stupid fake Santa Claus.
Jan, if he hears you saying that, you're not going to get anything for Christmas.
No, I don't care. I hate Christmas.
Jan, where are you going? Jan!
crisp wind whisked round roads which twist, bound by mounds of snow laden atop frozen ground delicate. Weary path taught misty grove fraught with dangers never sought, but the boy would not stop. Insisted did Jan on continuing his tryst, avoiding adhering to rules, persisted on resisting unwanted wastings like school, or assisting any other chore expected. He'd ignore and neglected all duties or hobbies, and was being quite naughty. Because his heavy heart was frost, suffered recent heavy loss at the cost of none other than his precious loving mother. She passed painfully away on the very last Christmas day.
I hate Christmas! And I'm never going back to my dad. Such a stupid holiday. But I am getting hungry. What's that? Who's there?
Tiny footsteps crept from out murky depth as the child sighed a breath. There's just two children, 3 feet high at best, clad in ragged vests that hung from bony chests while their beards were withered and stressfully weird. The boy thought no danger, fraught with their anger, he would not be any lamer as he was a king, stronger than any stranger, especially since he carried a very sharp, fairly long, locked, engaged stainless steel black switchblade. Simple boy making wages that will not show his favor.
Well, hello there, young boy. Where's your mother? Shouldn't you be home safe and sound under cover?
I don't know if you're dumb, stupid, or someone who's come into some kind of blindness, but show me this kindness. Refer to me as Highness. I clearly stand here a giant.
Oh, my mistake, since your family does ramble. To stop your grumbling, I humbly present King with a gift. Here's a potato to eat, and shall we beat the path neatly before any desire our defeat? We have 11 more brothers to meet. Come with us. I'm sure they'll be pleased.
What will you be doing?
Stealing things. So, little boy, you want to be naughty?
I don't want to be naughty. I am.
Good, 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 good. Come along, come along. Don't forget to eat your snack.
Jan's been a son, only a young lad of 10 but 1. Thought he was a giant in waiting. Perhaps one day he'd become. Naively crept with the duo of dwarves, deftly they sauntered towards a gaping stone gorge. Before he had a chance to bother the others, accosted he was by 11 of the brothers. They nearly smothered him with hugs and pats, what began his fear. Lest, and he relaxed. They gave him a pint of their finest lager and danced with him late until the sun hid its light. John thought he spied from the corner of his eye one of the brothers with John's precious black knife.
Sorry, young brother. I hate to be a bother, but that knife was my mother's. You can have it no longer.
The dwarf just laughed with a smile yellow and polite. As John stood with pride, another brother crept up behind, put another knife just an inch from John's side.
What knife you talking about? Hey, what knife? My knife? This knife? Or his knife?
Length for a dramatic piece intended to be listened to, The poet's imagination holds sway over the listener in this well-grounded tale. Creative and skillful, with fine production values. Bravo, poet. And Rex, I'd love to hear your take on this.
I'll second it. I love the palette drawn and the flavoring of the whole thing, because getting in those little voices of, come on, Grandpa, scary, scary, no, no, happy, scary, no. The little arguing children before bedtime, and how about I offer up both? You get both of what you want, and then there's the agreement. And that's just the opening angle. But all the extra little tidbits, Mark, this is a well done, a time-intensive thought in putting this together and getting all those little tidbits, the laughs, the little grunts, and everything else just sit right so they don't overlap. Great production. The story itself, since this is only part one, it hits on the thought of grieving, anger, pain, amongst other things, and being supremely unhappy. And this kind of walks that tale of a grim fairy tale. Yet we have not heard the last of this, considering this was just part one.
That's very, very true. I got a feeling this tale is going to have a moral at its end. Gene, please.
Yes, I'm expecting that. It's got such a great thoughts of production angle that there has to be something that really spanks the mind when the finish comes.
Yep. Thank you, Rex. And Gene, your comment?
Yes. I'm here. I thought, I went to upload this recording, and I'm listening to it as I'm putting it into the, I'm going, who did this? And I'm like searching all over it, and I'm going, oh, Lord have mercy, I hope Gonzo did this, he's some part of this creation. It took a little bit of dancing around to even find it now. But I thought it was so well done. It seemed very professional. And, it was awesome. What a wonderful tale. And as they say, the audio was just great. So, pretty amazing. But I think the other part of this is over on YouTube. So if anybody has an interest, you might want to go hunt it up. An excellent share with us tonight. So I want to thank you for that, Gonzo. Really amazing. Pretty darn amazing. Now, let me look at this. I got to check the magic clock again. 11:58. I got one more. You think we can squeak it in, fellas? We can do it. It's only three of us.
Sure.
Right. Okay, Rex, that means you get to read this one. Oh, no, wait.
Okey-dokey.
Well, yeah, Rex, you this one. Works for me. Either one is good. Not a bad read in you.
Gentleman Jack by Simon Guest. I want to taste Jack upon your lips. Take me to heaven. A bottle of smooth elixir dribbles life's purity. You don't have to tell me anything. Your eyes show your desire. Let me hold you tonight beneath a multitude of stars whilst tides ebb and flow. Your warmth radiates amidst the spring chill. Your smile is my everything. I want to taste Jack upon your lips. Take me to heaven. And poem.
Nice read, Rex.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
I want to taste Jack upon your lips. Take me to heaven. I don't think I've ever tasted that particular bourbon. But I'll assume it is what it is supposed to be.
It's Tennessee sipping whiskey. In order to be bourbon, you got to be Kentucky bound.
I'll take your word on that. I do like bourbon. If it's similar to the apple infused bourbon, I like a lot.
Well, Gentleman Jack is the next uptick from the regular Jack. It's a little smoother. It's got a little bit more body to it. So the offer up with Gentleman Jack, and then the play on the sensuality was a nice touch.
Well, thought had crossed my mind that jack upon your lips was a phrase from one woman to another woman who had a boyfriend named Jack.
Well,
yeah, I know.
I know. Simon.
All
right, Gene, wrap it up.
Well, Simon, that was a great piece, and I think you did an excellent job with it. It was a brevity, but it was well done. Absolutely. And that concludes our show for this evening. It was actually the very last piece. So that was pretty well done, guys. Nice work. Nice work. Laurent, thank you for co-hosting with me. I want to thank Naomi for popping in and spending half the night with us. Rex, I appreciate you calling in when you did and hanging with us the second half. Passions, thank you for calling in. I want to thank everybody who submitted a SoundCloud. It was a great night of poetry and a lot of fun. And I want to thank everybody everywhere. It's Friday. What do you think about that, guys? Very interesting. I hope you all have a great weekend and a wonderful week. Amen. GGIF. That's my favorite. And, okay, well, that about sums it all up. I hope you all take care of yourself. And I will see you soon, probably someday next week, or maybe tomorrow. You never know. Take care. Much love, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.